you about is evolution. So cool. What evolution are you talking about?
There's like really only one kind of evolution that the scientists mean when they say that. Life has probably a singular origin on Earth, and all life is related to it.
So you believe a fish turned into a cat?
No. I believe the ancestors of fish or of cats at one point in Earth's history, there were no cats, and there are cats today, but we're all the descendants of reproduction. So that means our ancestors a very long time ago were different organisms. And at one point, ancestor for all terrestrial life was a type of fish called Tiktaalik.
Okay. So do they have fossil records of these?
Tiktaalik? Yeah, I think there's two or three of them.
No, not of that. Of these changes, these slow, small changes over time.
Yeah, like Tiktaalik.
Another thing.
Sure.
So you have the missing link?
There is no missing link.
You're going to be a bazillionaire.
I'm not. Paleontology is horrendously underfunded. And these things have been known about for going on 100 years at this point.
Well, they've been thought about, not known about. It's not a fact that...
No, we have them. So, like, if this happened with humans, what would that evidence look like?
Well, I don't know, because there isn't any.
Well, you're wrong. Here it is.
Yeah, I see several different species.
Yeah, these are our ancestors. Some of them are, like, we're related to them. They're not necessarily a direct ancestor, but... So we have that evidence. I don't know why you said it doesn't exist. I mean, it's been known about, like, the Leakey family. They found the first one in the 1920s, I think.
You know, there's another, because, you know, they say that we're related to the chimp.
Yeah, we are.
By 1%, right?
No. We're 98.6% genetically similar to them.
Right. Well, they just did another study, and is a deep dive into DNA, and now they're saying that
you're gonna say 85%, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, no. Second of all, even if that was the case, that's the new number, it wouldn't matter because we're still more closely related to them than anything else. And they're still more, even if you use that technique, they're still more closely related to us than they are related to anything else. And all the similarities are still preserved in there. Like, do you think that a fox and a wolf are the same kind of animal? Do you think they're related?
I don't know. I mean, I know they look similar,
right?
You know, just different sizes.
Okay.
They're
both canines, right?
I'm sorry?
They're both canines, right?
Yeah, I suppose. I went to a museum and it kind of blew me away what was actually in the canine family and what was in the feline family.
Really?
But my point is there is no fossil record proving evolution.
No, it's literally right here.
You can show me a picture, but that doesn't prove anything.
But you said there are no fossils, and there are fossils. So you said the fossils would prove it, and then you said I don't give a darn about no stinking fossil. So what would prove it?
That there are no fossils. I'm saying it does not prove that we came from monkeys.
What would prove? Well, we didn't come. Well. Well, in a way, we kind of did, but what would prove it?
So, at the very beginning, we started off as what, amoebas?
No, some sort of prokaryote would probably be one of the very, very, very earliest forms of life.
Which is what?
Just a much simpler single-celled thing.
Okay. So evolution is small changes over long periods of time?
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Okay, so what is a two-celled organism called?
So I haven't heard this in so long. So if evolution is true, there are multi-celled things today and single-celled things in the past. That means there should be two-celled organisms and three and four and five. No, it doesn't. Right. It doesn't work that way. Oh. We have in the lab taken unicellular organisms and artificially induced selective pressure to them. And we have actually caused them to evolve into a multicellular organism, but they don't do that by becoming a two-celled organism and then a three-celled organism and then a four-celled organism or anything like that.
So it takes a lab to do it?
No, we've seen it. We've been able to do it in a laboratory before.
Okay, well, if that's not how it works, then why would they do that?
The way I said it doesn't work isn't what they saw. So you're not, your point still does not stand.
Well, I'm not making a point. I'm trying to understand what you're saying.
They've taken single-celled organisms and got them to evolve into multicellular organisms. That has been demonstrated that can happen.
Okay.
So even if we don't have the two-celled organism and the three-celled organism, which there's no reason to think that that's the way it would take place, we can still demonstrate scientifically that this is possible. There's all kinds of things like the past is in a way unobservable, but that doesn't mean that you can't collect evidence that supports your scientific ideas about the past. This is how all of forensics works. This is how all of archaeology works, plus a lot more. Go ahead.
It goes off of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But evidence does not mean that it is factual. It just points to something, right?
Yeah, I mean, like if you want to get philosophical, science doesn't deal like in absolute proofs. It just establishes what the best explanation for something is. So we're getting way sidetracked here. I asked you, you said there are no missing links, but we definitely have the missing links, but you said that doesn't prove it. So what would prove it?
Well, no, we don't have, we have fossil records of other species similar to us, but there
is that's what evolution would say would have. Evolution predicted that would be the case. Like, if evolution was true, this is what the evidence would look like. There certainly is no denying that.
So, I agree that evolution is true to a certain extent. I believe that a big cat became a small cat. You know, that is true. Like, and you can see fossil records of that, of the gradual change. But you don't see one species becoming another.
Yeah, because that's not evolution. That's Pokemon. Or Digimon.
That's going way back.
Hell yeah.
But what I was gonna say is that no evidence of God is, there is evidence. I'm not saying it is absolutely factual, but I mean, just the world we live in is evidence.
What would a world look like if there was no God?
Well, there wouldn't be one.
Okay. So if everything is evidence, then nothing is evidence because you can't tell the difference.
Hmm. Well, I don't even know how that makes sense. If everything is evidence, nothing is evidence.
But because you, Well, because you couldn't tell the difference. So how, like, if you're going to claim that the world we live in is the evidence of God, then I need to know, okay, well, if that statement could possibly be false, then what would the evidence look like? Because then we could test whether the idea is true. And if there just simply could never be a world, then it's like you're saying the only possible way for existence to exist is if God, then the only thing we can do there is just beg the question, essentially.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm not going to argue with that. I mean, but God is in everything. So, yes, everything is evidence of him. But I don't think we're going to get anywhere with that. I just think that if you see a painting, you know there was a painter. Like, somebody did that. Ink didn't just fall onto a canvas in such a way.
Yeah, but I know how paintings are made. So, forget, like, your examples are just going to be things we know are created by people. I don't disagree that people do things. Let's just say there are no people that have ever existed in the universe. I don't see why an Earth wouldn't still exist and our galaxy wouldn't still exist. So when I look at a painting, I know a person made that. When I look out and I see a tree, well, I think trees just kind of grow. I don't think anything made the tree. So you have to tell me, what would nature look like? What does nature created by God look like? What does nature not created by God look like? And how do we tell the difference?
But so, if you're
go ahead.
People like Albert Einstein and these people that are really into math have stated that, you know, after when they scratched the surface, they believed it just science, right? But once they dove deep into it, they said there's no way that this just came together on chance. Like, I know that I've never crunched the numbers myself, so I don't like using it as an example, but the odds of all of this happening by chance is, I don't even remember the number. Like I said, I don't like using it because I've never done it myself. But it's extremely, it's like finding a specific grain of sand on all the beaches combined. Like that's
I don't know how people come up with those numbers either. They don't tend to share where any of that comes from. But
right,
I mean, okay, what are the odds that God did? Because God could do anything. I thought God could have created a world where the sky is purple, because God's all powerful. So, okay, well, we live in a world where the sky is blue. So what are the odds that God created a world where the sky is blue?
I don't know.
And we're just left with either saying, we're left either just saying 100%, because we're just kind of begging the question, or we're left saying, I have no idea, because if God can do anything, then that means no matter what the world looks like, that's consistent with God. And it's like, okay, well, if you're trying to sell me a claim and you're telling me that, well, actually it literally doesn't matter what the evidence looks like, it would still be what I believe in, then you haven't given me any reason to believe you. It's like, I mean, like, if this were a court of law and the defense was like, look, this is all the evidence we have against the killer, and then like they go through it and they're like, literally none of this evidence points to the earth. Let's say, like, I don't know. Let's say that they say, to make this a little bit better, they say, like, well, the defense, like, we predict all this evidence. So, like, if we get testimony and we go and look for the evidence, it should look like this. And then they go and do their investigation and they find, well, everybody's testimony was completely different from what you said, and all of the evidence was different. And they just said, oh, well, the killer could have done it some other way then. So like that evidence is still works for us. The judge would be like, no.
I'm happy to announce that I can now offer signed copies of both of my books. This is because I've reopened my merch store where you can get your very own Spanky, t-shirt, and more. If you don't know, Rational Answers to Stupid Questions is a collection of responses to about 100 of the most common anti-scientific tropes. The book is meticulously detailed, it's been fact-checked by real scientists, and it's written in a clear and easy-to-understand way. Evolution, the Big Bang, creationism, flat Earth, all of that plus more is in there. Facts That Aren't True is a collection of over 150 commonly held beliefs that are not true. Each claim has a story behind it. You'll learn the history behind the claim, the science that disproves it or partially supports it in some cases, and lots of side stories and tangents. Categories include the human body, history, religion, animals, nature, language, and a hodgepodge of miscellaneous facts that aren't true. So if you want to be equipped to handle the misinformation that you see me tackling here every day, get a copy of one or both of those books for yourself. Thank you.
So especially with evidence and law, one of the biggest things they look for is consistency, which the Bible has been consistent in all of its time. Science is the one that is very inconsistent.
Wait. What did you say has been consistent for all of time?
The Bible.
That's just, I don't know what that even possibly could mean. I mean, the Bible's been revised countless times, and its interpretation has been revised countless times.
Well, no, because they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, which verified that the translation is accurate. Now, when they do a reprint,
that's just literally not true. In the most modern Bibles, it says that Goliath was 6 cubits in a span, but in the Dead Sea Scrolls, it says he was only 4 cubits in a span tall.
I can't speak on that. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I mean, like, there are differences in the translations, and we find, like, even with Gospels, when we go back, we find there are entire stories that just aren't even in the oldest Gospels, and the people deliberately change the wording in certain things in the Gospels to try to emphasize or make a point that they thought the Gospels were trying to make, so they would deliberately edit it like that, or it in those ways.
So back then they didn't have words that we have now. So they would, like, homosexuality, they described the act of it, but they didn't have the word. So when they translated,
I can understand that, but I mean, like, deliberate editings to try to promote a particular, like, Christology, for example, like the Johannine comma. It's very few people that actually, like, study the Bible think that that was original, because it's not in any of the really old manuscripts, and so it's just added in there. There are three that bear witness: the whatever, and the innie, the meanie, the miney, and the mo. And they like to party or something. I can't remember exactly what it says. It's something like that, though. The woman caught in adultery, that doesn't appear in any gospel until like the 1200s, 1300s or something like that. So, but also, like, the gospels have definitely changed. And I wish, like I said, I don't sit around just trying to memorize everything, although I should probably take more notes than I do. But also, like, the interpretation of it has changed. There have been some pretty famous schisms, right? In Christianity.
So the message has always been the same. Interpretation, so you can interpret something different, but that's to the person, not the book. So there are Christians that use the Bible to do evil and try to justify it. But that's not the book, that's the person.
I can kind of sort of agree with that. I mean, the Bible says suffer not a witch to live. And there are people, unfortunately, that live in the United States that think we should have the death penalty for homosexuals and people that practice witchcraft and a few other things.
Yeah, I couldn't. that's so extreme.
I know, but the Bible does say, "Suffer not a witch to live."
Well, I guess, again, that would be interpretation. Like, and you have to give the full context. What is what book is it out of? Who are they writing to? Who wrote it? Because that matters. So, talking to the people of, I really can't think of anything, but when Paul wrote letters, he was talking to a specific church, just like saying that a woman can't be a leader in a church.
Okay, Dem, I want to stop you right there. We were talking about evolution, right? And so I don't want to like wildly change the subject on this.
Okay, yeah, no, you're right, you're right.
And I know less about this than that, so it would be more productive for, yep, I think, both of us.
Agreed. Well, I don't have a whole lot more to say.
Oh, okay. Well, like, this started with you making the point that the science always changes, but the Bible always remains true. Like, that's just, that seems kind of like a dangerous way of thinking. When we learn new things, we change our mind. And that's like the strength of science. Like, who would you trust more? Like, if somebody was running for office or something like that, like, who would you trust more? If both candidates were asked, have you ever made any mistakes? And one of them said, absolutely not. In fact, I can't make mistakes. Or the other person that said, oh yeah, I've made plenty of them and I've learned from them.
I don't want to get political. But yeah, I get your point.
Well, even if you're just going to hire somebody or like want to work at a company and you ask both bosses or whatever that question, and they give those, it'd be like, no, not the first person.
I made that point because you brought up how our justice system works. So I just made the point that science is inconsistent. I was just going off of what you said.
What does science is inconsistent mean?
That it changes. The story changes.
Well, when we learn more information, yeah.
Right. I'm not disagreeing with you. I brought that up because you brought up the courtroom setting. So I just made a point about that. That in a courtroom, or whenever you're trying to charge somebody, it's the person whose story changes that is guilty.
Sure, but science has never, I mean, I don't know, like, science doesn't, like,
listen, I believe,
know, I don't know how to say this, like, science doesn't go around proclaiming that this, I mean, I'm trying to say this in a way that doesn't sound like contradictory or whatever, but like, science doesn't go around saying this is what the truth is. Science does have confidence in its claims because I think there's plenty of historical reason and there's plenty of efficacy, and the system is built for knowledge seeking in a way that I just don't think anybody really disagrees with. So,
well, and you have to admit that like the Smithsonian, they have a set narrative that this is what happened. And even though they'll have evidence pointing away from that, they will just disregard it.
Like what?
You know, I can't think of anything specific right offhand. I didn't plan on getting into this debate.
Okay, but, good, because I thought you were going to say something about their exhibits on, like, slavery in America or something, and I was like, God, no, not that.
No, I'm just, there are a bunch of stories, though, where, you know, because they have this narrative that they will just not look at other evidence because they're making puzzle pieces fit.
I don't know what you're, like, you said you're not talking about a specific example. I don't know, but like the idea that the Smithsonian, they don't employ experts and they don't use the evidence collected by experts to be able to, and so that's how they build their exhibit or whatever. And if somebody came along and said, like, well, did you hear about, like, look, I'm just asking questions, like, no, like, we curated this and we knew what we were doing, so, like, we're not listening to any of this stuff. I mean, I'm not accusing you of any of this, but this is the logic that the Holocaust denier uses. And it's the logic that all of the people that try to change the history textbooks in the South used. Like, well, actually, the slaves sang a bunch of songs and had a really good time for the most part. It's like, shut up.
Yeah. I'm not going to argue with you on that. And just, I see what you're saying, but that's not exactly the same.
Right. Okay. Well, okay, does that pretty much cover everything you had to say?
Yeah, well, I got one last thing.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
So you don't believe in magic, which is what you said earlier, but you do believe that life came from non-life?
Yeah, just through chemistry.
And how would that work?
Well, I don't know 100% what you mean by that, but everything about, like, there are books and scientific papers on origin of life that have been written. They talk about, like, the precursor chemical pathways toward creating the essential organic molecules that living cells need. There's all kinds of research on that. So we can demonstrate, we've actually found a little bit of this in nature, and we can recreate some of this in the lab as well. So we can demonstrate that, like, pieces of this puzzle, we can demonstrate them, I guess. I don't know how to say it better than that. How to put the puzzle together, we don't know approximately how that would have happened, but we do still have supporting evidence of it.
Right. So, I mean, anybody can write something down on a piece of paper and say, oh, I've been studying this. Doesn't make it true.
But if you read a scientific paper, they have, like, hundreds of citations. I mean, it's, and there'll be, some scientific papers are half the length of a decent sized textbook. Like, they go on and on and on and on.
But to your point earlier, the same thing with the people from the South talking about how slaves were singing songs. They had all this evidence and papers written about it. Doesn't make it true.
Yeah, but science is reproducible and relies on a body of work that's been confirmed over and over again. The stuff about like whitewashing of history, that's just literally political propaganda. It doesn't hold up to scrutiny, and it's pushed by people that are censorious. So there's no equivalency there.
If there's no equivalency there, then there is none to your point earlier.
What was my earlier point?
Able to reproduce non-life creating life. The answer is
no, not yet. But that doesn't mean that the miraculous explanation, there's no evidence for the miraculous explanation. Like, right. show me an example of God doing it.
So at the end of the day, it's just somebody's thought on paper. They have not been able to prove it. They have been trying, but it doesn't even make sense.
But there are very multiple aspects of it that have been demonstrated.
Well, yeah, but you have to have the full thing to say something magical happened, that life came from something not living.
All I'm telling you is the explanation that is purely naturalistic is gathering supporting evidence for it. The alternative will never have any supporting evidence for it, because it can't ever even have any supporting evidence for it.
Well, the supporting evidence is that Jesus died on a cross and then rose 3 days later.
That didn't create life on on planet Earth billions of years ago?
Proves that God's existence.
Even if that were true, that wouldn't prove that God created life on planet Earth.
If Jesus rose from the dead, he is obviously the Son of God, so his word would be true. It's a pretty easy and evident trail that I think it takes more faith to believe that something with no life created life. Like that's a...
But life just literally is chemistry.
Like I'm not saying it's not.
Well, yeah. So then non-life comes from life all the time.
Example?
Like you right now, you ate... I'll use my cat. So my cat... Usually she's in here. She's not here right now. But so my cat drinks water, which is not alive. Mm-hmm. She breathes air, which is not alive. And then she eats cat food, which is not alive either. And then in her body, a bunch of fancy chemistry at the cellular level transforms those things into a bunch of molecules, and there's tons of energy exchange. Some poop is made. And all of that, all of the biological processes that come about through that, which in a bottom-up way is just using non-living raw materials and transforming it via chemistry, which is non-living as well. As we understand all those systems and look at those systems as they gain complexity, eventually we can't zoom out anymore because we get to the organism, which is the cat, and the cat is alive. So life coming from non-life.
Boy, that's a stretch.
I mean, not really.
Yeah, it is. That doesn't mean that life comes from non-life. It means that life is being sustained by non-life.
Well, yeah, that's
create life.
So even if it's sustaining, then what we can do is we can look at the fact of the matter that that's how it works today. That all life today is powered exclusively by non-living chemistry or whatever. And then we can ask the question, well, why would it be unreasonable then to assume that the non-living chemistry, which builds that system at every level until it gains complexity to the point where we have a living organism, why could chemistry not have done that in the first place? And there's really no reasonable rebuttal to that. The only what's a little bit unfortunate is that we don't know precisely how it happened.
Right. And that's what I'm saying, that takes a huge leap of faith. They have been trying to demonstrate, to reproduce it, and cannot.
Yeah, but we've made progress on it.
I wouldn't even call it progress. They've done some things.
Many things.
Right, but nothing that proves that life came from non-life. I mean, just use common sense. Like, that doesn't make sense. That something non-living would produce something living.
It makes perfect sense because non-living forces are what make life possible in the first place.
You know, I don't...
I mean, like, how do I want to say this? A hurricane. Where does a hurricane come from? Well, it comes from things that aren't hurricane. Well, a hurricane is windy, and so the air movements, they move around, and once those air movements get into a particular pattern, that creates a hurricane. Oh, so a hurricane is wind, so wind creates wind, right? It's like, well, also... you have to have a sun in the oceans because the energy from the sun radiates onto the oceans. The oceans absorb that energy and then re-radiate it into the atmosphere. And that exchange of energy is what creates the conditions that cause the hurricane. So hurricanes come from non-hurricanes, right? And
because that's all true, we can follow the evidence trail and by, oh, this is how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't do that with life.
We have parts of it. I mean, a long time ago, we didn't understand the entire story of what makes a hurricane happen, but...
And this is what I'm talking about with scientists saying, oh, this is how it happened, and just making puzzle pieces fit because they want that to be true.
No, not really. We'll have to end it here because I got some other people to talk to, but all right. You're kind of treating this like we either know it or we know nothing. And I don't think that's fair. I think we are making steps toward understanding it.
Okay. Well, hey, I appreciate you being respectful. I appreciate you taking time to talk with me.
No problem.